Hello, I'm Tony Galvan, Director of Health and Wellness for Life Care Services and your host for this Health Services Division podcast. Welcome to part two of our conversation with Colin Milner, CEO of the International Council on Active Aging. One of the ways that LCS is looking to enhance that resident health experience and really increase that connectivity is through our Health and Wellness Navigator program. It's something that we're in the midst of creating / launching. And so I am just kind of early on interested in your thoughts, Colin, on the value and importance of a resident really having that one-stop shop for all of their preventative, reactive healthcare needs met, really with that one single touch point that then connects them to the appropriate, whether it's the people, the programs, the services, whether it's within or outside of the community. What do you think of that approach?
Oh, I think that is a missing link in most communities. I think that service is something that will become invaluable for everyone who touches it, because I can tell you personally, having a parent in independent living and a grandparent in skilled nursing, long-term care, and my dad is in long-term care as well, that having gone through looking for various services, looking for who he should be working with in regards to different areas of his life, can one, consume a significant amount of time, and two, a lot of times it's hard to actually find competent, reliable people. So if there's a certain level of vetting that has gone through that, and then there are put into what one could call a concierge service that can help people not only fulfill their aspirations but fulfill their actual needs and expectations, I think that's a magnificent tool that will really put a point to differentiation in the services that you offer. And now, remembering, coming back to, you talked about the silos, I think that this is also one of the tools that can help people break down the silos, because it lets people know where to go, and where to go maybe within your own community. And if organizations now, and there has been such a focus in rebranding communities over the last few years, are looking at rebranding and refocusing their efforts, a tool like this in breaking down silos is imperative to the success of it.
Well, and I think part of our motivation and impetus for kind of moving in this direction was also just the idea of how communities can leverage that connectivity from a post-acute care perspective. And so, given that, as we talked about earlier, one of the common misconceptions about the role of wellness is how maybe it only touches or for the most part touches that very well senior. We're really, again, trying to make that case for the incorporation of wellness as part of a community's post-acute care strategy. So this is obviously an arena that is ever-changing. Healthcare reform can be complex from a regulatory perspective. So I'm wondering what you think, Colin, on how wellness plays a part in that arena as healthcare reform continues to evolve in our country.
Well, Tony, I think one of the key things is to remember that everything that we do impacts our health and well-being. How we speak, our attitudes, the friends that we have, our social networks, whether we are volunteering, whether we're working, everything that we do impacts us and impacts our well-being and in turn our wellness. So whether it's in whether the Medicare model changes, whether we are seeing the accountable care organizations that come in and that are creating, a real need for transitional services, all of these are, to me, noise on the outside. What's on the inside is that at the end of the day, if I'm transitioning from a hospital into a community and I'm there for a short period of time, my role is to get back to a state of well-being, a state of wellness. And the services that we offer enable us to do that. What we eat is all part of our well-being. So everything that we offer, and I think sometimes communities miss that point, is that, you know, wellness isn't a buzzword. Wellness isn't a center. Wellness is the result of choices that we make as individuals, but also services that we provide as communities to help with those choices. And it really doesn't matter where you are, those services could and should be offered. And if you're able to achieve better health and better well-being, you know, a community has much greater value to you than if not.
Yeah, and I think that could definitely, and it will be, its own probably separate podcast topic, just the idea of how to best position your community's health and wellness program as part of that greater post-acute care strategy, because hospitals and doctors and healthcare providers are looking for kind of the best partners that could really help them maximize those goals, as you mentioned, Colin, of just achieving optimal health and wellness levels for those seniors.
Of course, they're also looking for the numbers. They want you to be able to show that by doing XYZ, you have impacted my cardiovascular health, you've impacted, you know, whatever the issue is, so that they can now attribute a dollar behind it to show that by, you know, having someone move from a hospital to a residential setting or a community setting is a better investment. So not only is it imperative to have the services, but it is crucial to be able to benchmark those in some way, shape, or form to be able to show the value, especially whenever you're dealing with anything to do with the government.
That's a great point. And, you know, earlier, Colin, you kind of mentioned part of why it makes sense and some of the return on having a comprehensive and successful wellness program at the community level being helping communities make good on their missions. And, you know, going beyond just a tagline. And when you think of a community's mission or an organization's mission being, you know, through the wellness program, enhancing the lifestyle of the seniors that they serve directly. Switching gears just a little bit. What's your perspective on the role that a senior living community could play, not only in enhancing the well-being of their own residents and those that they serve directly, but even just the greater community as a whole, just given the resources, the expertise, possibly even the physical space that some of these communities have available to them? What should they be considering? What should they be thinking about as far as playing a role in just the greater community's wellness from a senior's perspective?
Well, I think that, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to see over time that senior living communities have the opportunity to become a hub within the community. And instead of being gated or exclusive, they will become a lot more inclusive of the greater external community. You know, in a world where few people are experts in the area of aging, the communities have a leg up. In a world where, you know, they are much fewer services, as we just discussed, or harder to find services for, you know, older adults, communities have the opportunity to take the lead there. We did a think tank many years ago, and Dr. Joe Coughlin from MIT presided over that, and his comment was, you know, the opportunity for senior living in general is to own the aging space. And when we talk about own the aging space, own the fact that we are experts in this area, and most people aren't. So come to us, you know, let us be that. You know, your online tool, as an example, could be a fantastic tool for the general community. You know, you have an opportunity to touch people online in the tens of thousands where maybe you only touch a few hundred within one specific community. Across the country, you could be touching millions of people online with that kind of tool. So the impact with the external community, I think, can be significant moving forward. What we have to do is to get out of our minds that our community is exclusive, and to get into our minds that, you know, what are the ways that we can include society? Do we have dining services that are inclusive of all? Maybe what you do is you have two sides of your dining services, one for residents and one for residents who also want to, you know, hang out with the general public. You have a similar thing with, your gym services. If you're in an area that has poor parks and rec and you have a beautiful property, you know, why not open it up so that, young kids and their families can come onto the property? And I think, you know, bringing the community to life and making it more intergenerational is really, in my mind, the future. And that's where wellness becomes the centerpiece of a community as opposed to an afterthought.
Yeah, that makes total sense, and it's certainly an operational balance for communities to execute on something like that. And as with most things, if your intentions are in the right place, and if you're again just doing the right thing overall, oftentimes that that bottom line can follow. I know a lot of communities like that idea from a sales and marketing perspective, from an exposure perspective. And so you think of how it might make, again, going back to the business sense, that it might mean for the communities. There could certainly be some benefit there as well. So it sounds like from your perspective, that's definitely a direction that the industry is taking. What other trends, Colin, in senior wellness should senior living organizations be on the lookout for?
Well, I think that the obvious one, of course, is technology, which plays into what we just talked about. But technology in many areas, there's, I was just reading about a research project that is being done at Fanshawe College in London, Ontario, in Canada, in regards to a Parkinson's suit, and they are trying to figure out how to stop the tremors by wearing the suit. You have exoskeletons that are out there that now they're trying to make them go from being large and bulky to literally almost skin tight. You have all the wearables that, in my mind, could become or should become a portable online health platform that, in many instances, may require you never to have to go and get a medical again, because your doctor can tell almost everything about you in real time, so you actually don't need to go in to get that yearly checkup. I think technology is going to play a very, very huge role in the services that we offer. And, as an example, when it comes to care services, prescriptions and so forth, an e-pill that you can take that is the size of a grain of rice, that it's already out there, it's already being used, that will actually tell you whether you are taking too much of your prescription, how your gut is reacting. It can tell you all the things that are going on the inside of your body. I mean, these are the type of things that are going to completely revolutionize things. Artificial intelligence, to me, that's very exciting, because you tie that in with the wearable health platform where, maybe our shirt and our shorts are actually feeding back all of that information to artificial intelligence that is then giving us immediate prescriptive recommendations for, what we eat, to how we exercise, to whether we're stressing our heart too much, to, whether we're dehydrated, all of these things that haven't been available that I think are going to completely change our lives as the iPhone did. Now, the question is, do communities embrace this? Some are really advanced, and some are, you know, playing catch up. We did a think tank in Washington, D.C. in May, and one of the things that came out of that is that there is a real discrepancy. There's some communities that are very advanced, you know, with broadband services, with, you know, the platforms that they're using, and then there are many communities that can't even get wireless set up. So I think that communities need to kind of come into the modern era to then embrace the possibilities. I think that that's going to be a key one.
Yeah, and so much of that embraceability, if you will, probably is influenced just by how digestible just the idea of technology is, because it can be quite daunting. And so however communities can, you know, break it down a little bit further to think of, you know, there's resident kind of focused and tailored technology. There's technology that directly impacts the staff and what they do day in and day out. There's technology that touches the community, you know, kind of bigger picture. And so there's so many kind of avenues through which you think of technology in general. So I can appreciate how, you know, how that spectrum that you just kind of talked about exists, where you have your trailblazing communities that, you know, probably do a great job of being able to digest and understand what it means for each of those audiences, and probably have a strategy and an action plan behind, you know, how they're going to move forward with that embracement and adoption, and others that are maybe lagging a little bit, you know, possibly don't have those mechanisms in place. So I think the bottom line is that it behooves all of us to, you know, have an awareness of what's out there technologically, and then even to go beyond the awareness and consider not if, but when and how we're going to move forward with the implementation of some of these advances. So agree 1,000%.
You know, what one of the big challenges, Tony, is that, you know, many of the providers of all these technologies haven't really taken the needs of the communities into consideration. As an example, you know, trying to make things so that they can all work on one platform. You know, so many of them have their own individual platforms. They haven't, you know, worked with older adults to make sure that they're really inclusive and accessible. So there's a lot of due diligence that needs to be done to ensure that the products that you do use are the right products. And, you know, that's another trend that we have seen as a huge uptick in organizations that are now coming together that maybe previously hadn't collaborated, but are now collaborating in things like incubation or testing products, you know, to be able to provide that feedback to the product provider to ensure that you actually do get the product you want instead of pay for something that only 50% of people will be able to use.
Yeah, there's no doubt that collaboration is crucial, and for us to position ourselves as those experts, as those senior living experts, where the technology folks, they're the tech experts, and we're the, you know, the senior living experts. So coming together can certainly make for some optimal product development. Bringing it back a little bit, Colin, as we kind of wrap up, and really appreciate you taking the time today. Want to let our audience here know a little bit more about, specific to ICAA, what are some directions that your organization is looking to take? You know, I've always been, and I know colleagues of mine and those communities that we work with, when we think about, you know, who do you go to, where do you go to if you're looking for credible, innovative information on what we want to do from a health and wellness, active aging perspective, there's no doubt that ICAA is at the top of our list when we consider it. So I think the audience is always curious about, you know, what you have cooking, what you have going on, you know, as it pertains to how we can do our best to deliver on the services to our seniors.
You know, there are a variety of things that we have cooking, you know, and one of the things that we're trying to minimize through solid or at least, you know, good reputable data is, you know, for a lot of people, wellness is actually a threat if you think about it. because of the disruption and the innovation that is occurring around it. You know, if you're an organization that what you've done for the last 20 years is that your whole model is around care, and now you're hearing people coming in talking about, oh, I want wellness services, and you see in the news that, you know, the government is focusing on these preventive and wellness services, and all the world around you is changing. It disrupts your business. So one of the things we're trying to do is to provide more and more services to minimize that disruption. And by the way, that disruption, I mean in a good way. You know, yes, everything disrupts our businesses nowadays. Technology is disrupting our business. So one of the things that we're focusing on that we've discussed numerous times throughout this past hour or so is that, you know, people. It all comes back to the people that you have. You know, you can spend all the money that you want on these beautiful communities and on the various forms of equipment and furnishings and so forth, but it really comes back to the people bringing it alive and breaking down the silos, especially when it comes to wellness. So one of the things that we'll be introducing in the new year is multi-month wellness manager certificate program. And, you know, it will be close to or the equivalent of, you know, doing a semester at university to get that certificate. It's not a weekend certificate. And the reason is because we believe that, you know, the future, the wellness manager will hold a key role, if they don't already, in an organization, because it will be all about quality of life, which is what caring is about. You know, caring is about providing a quality of life for people. So our goal is to help provide quality of life that actually enables people to live a better life. So I think that that is, you know, one of the key elements that we're working on. But we're also working on, you know, like yourself, a whole new web portal where, you know, our members will be able to share their experiences, you know, as an example, what you're doing with your podcast here. If you wish, you know, you're able to share online at ICAA with other ICAA members to share, you know, more and more best practices. But I think that we need to, you know, is to move into a time where the trend is really, let's break down these silos. Wellness is no longer a center, which for many years it took a while to get us to actually realizing that wellness was something that could be done and should be done, and many people have done it in their centers, but realizing that wellness impacts everything. So we need to move beyond the numbers to actually focusing on how does everything we do impact quality of life. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think many communities will need to start really looking at is how does the actual setup of their community impact quality of life? Are the way you structure your dining, is that improving people's quality of life? Are you creating social areas that actually improve quality of life instead of just providing settings? I think that those are some of the, you know, the key areas. And, of course, you know, we will try and embrace more and more, you know, the technological point to bring more information in regards to what is happening in that area and best practices around that.
That's really exciting. You know, I know that the idea of a wellness manager certification of sorts is something that it's going to be super interesting to, you know, to those at the community level. And it's something that I would anticipate, you know, your executive directors and administrators getting behind and just to really enhance, again, what the person who is at the core responsible for that community's health and wellness program, that they invest in that sense in them. Your kind of your peer-to-peer portal sounds exciting as well. So really looking forward to the evolution of those initiatives coming out. That's really, really exciting.
And one of them, just to leave you with this thought, and sorry to jump in, is that, you know, we have a think tank that we're doing actually next week. And what we're looking at is, and we think that this is one of the issues that holds back some of the wellness services, is that people have a hard time trying to figure out what is the actual return on investment on their wellness staff. Our goal is to actually show that return on investment so that people realize the actual impact that they have in their bottom line, moving wellness up on the financial in the financial ledger.
Yeah, that's always relevant too. Whether it's at a community level or even above that, for people to really be able to quantify that value. So that's exciting to hear, and really looking forward to the outcomes of that think tank experience. So, well, Colin, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Really insightful information, and great for all of our audience just to kind of hear. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you to the audience today as well for listening in. Check us out for future podcasts as part of the LCS Health Services Division. As always, thank you to Ben Sounds for our intro and outro music as well. So a little shout out there, and hoping everybody has a great rest of the day. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Colin. Really again, appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tony.